Welcome to Anyone. This is Tay Tay, and I appreciate y'all.
Hola. This was a fun conversation, one that was so fun that I actually had to take a second crack at it. Fucked up the first time, which is bound to happen when you do these kind of things. Eventually, you're going to have a fun conversation that ends up getting corrupted because of hardware BS. I'm going to blame it on the hardware. It definitely wasn't my fault. But got to sit down with Joe Corneo, who is a host at 103.3 Jams over in Kansas City. I got a lot of respect for this dude's musical knowledge. When I say music, it's usually just hip hop. I'm sure he has an eclectic taste, but music to me is just only one genre. But he's a flexible creative. I've seen him produce albums. He's co-founder over Yada Yada, content brand, which produces a whole bunch of fun stuff in a whole bunch of different mediums. I've seen him host on stage, be behind the scenes on productions. So it's a fun dude to kind of sit down and pick his brain and really tap into Kansas City, I think. So super fun conversation, I think. And in all likelihood, he's gonna be back. I'm glad I was able to get this one done. So with that, here's my conversation with Joe Corneo. Appreciate you, sir. And am I saying that right? Is it Corneo?
Corneo?
Is
yes, sir.
Is there like an American English way of pronouncing it and the actual way of pronouncing it? Or
no, I think it's just pronounced Corneo.
Okay.
But in American Corneo. People just call me Corny Joe because they say every letter in the name, so it just sounds weird.
Like, all right, man. No need to go that far with it.
I got similar fucking stories. That's hilarious. And what nationality is that? Where does that come from? Mexican? Mm-hmm. Dope. And I might have caught some information that said, like, you're first generation college graduate, all that kind of stuff. Like, believe me, I know a whole group of people that are similar situation and all that kind of stuff. Our parents were like FOBs. We call them FOBs, fresh off the boat.
Yeah.
So, like, it's everybody's the first at everything with a lot of the motherfuckers we came up with. This is the fucking second time that we're sitting down because you're super graceful with your time. We tried doing this once. Shit got corrupted. I fucking enjoyed the hell out of that last talk, but thank you for sitting down again.
No problem. Thank you for wanting to do that again.
Yeah,
do this again.
Absolutely, for sure. I appreciate you. More than anything, I guess we're getting towards the end of the year. How do you feel about 2023?
It's been great. I think in the long run, it's always great. There's been moments a lot, especially during the summer where there's a lot of stagnant times, a lot of uncertainty, moments of hesitation, not really knowing what lies ahead in the future, which is always nerve-wracking in real time. But, you know, at the end of the year, I always come out, like, graceful and standing on top of, like, whatever it is I had to deal with. So, you know, I always learned that regardless of what life throws at me in the year, I'm always going to come out on top, standing, you know.
Nice.
Even if I'm not winning in that moment, like, as long as I keep pushing and keep striving, like, I'll always come out on top some way, somehow.
Nice. And I feel like it's a consistent message from a lot of the, at least, content that I've, like, tapped into and everything that you're responsible for. If you could give us a quick preview on what you plan on doing right after this podcast.
Right after this podcast, I'm going to go hop on the airwaves for High 103 Jams.
Nice, absolutely, for sure. So what is that, what is the job? How would you describe it to somebody who's never heard of that job?
I would just say, for what I do on the radio, I'm like a hype man. So I'm just the voice you'll hear in between songs. I'm here to fill you in, like, who I am, what's going on, what we're giving away, and then what's coming up, and then we go to break.
Absolutely, for sure. Do you feel like it's more of like a, could you be like more locally minded, or is it more a national thing? Can you let people know about what's going on here in Kansas City, or is it just like national music, whatever, and then maybe if you get a chance, you might be able to squeeze in some Kansas City stuff?
It's mostly national, because with radio, one of the things you learn early on, radio's a business. So it's all like local, like all national hits,
yeah,
as opposed to like local music.
Because yeah,
people always want radio to play local hits. Uh-huh. And it's like, we would love to do that, but is there money behind it? Is us playing a local artist going to generate money for the station? Because at the end of the day, this is a business, much like the music industry, business first. So if there's a big local smash, so say like Freak Block Tales by D-Walk, that was a huge local hit to where we had to play it. because it was generating money, not only for D-Walk, but for the station because people wanted to hear us play it.
Interesting.
So there's times where I may be able to squeeze a local artist in at the end of the hour if we need to make up some time. But for the most part, I have to just play what they load up because like that part of the job is out of my hands for the most part.
Interesting. What they load up. Okay, for sure. Yeah. Is there some sort of like software interface or something like that that's like specific to I 103? Is it, what it, like when they load up, what does that mean?
Like, so we have a, like we have an automation system, which okay. is where our program director will load it up and get it ready for us. So when I come in, all I got to do is just like load up what he already has set.
Okay.
And so that's pretty much, the program director sets what you hear on the radio.
Okay, so like this is a little bit of how the sausage gets made and everything like that. So is there kind of like a little bit of a, like a, I don't know, like a brotherhood a little bit about like people that do your job and all that kind of stuff that kind of understand that from the outside looking in, maybe there's some demands that can't really be met because it's out of your hands and everything like that?
For sure. Yeah, for sure. I think there's definitely like a better understanding, especially like here at Hot 103. You know, we have Brian Bishon in here, who's one of like the most popular DJs in Kansas City.
Yeah.
And you know, people always want Brian to like put them on and whatnot, but they don't understand that there's more that goes into it than just Brian saying he likes your song. Like there's always somebody higher up in radio you have to answer to before you can just play somebody's music on the radio.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got so many questions on I always say music, but when I say music, it's never music. It's always just rap and hip hop. Like, I'm not talking about music
like
in general.
Yeah, music.
Exactly. Because there's so much more music than that. But that's what I think of as music.
Yeah.
I got questions about that. We'll try to get back into that. But we'll get a little bit more into you and your backstory and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to college? What college did you go to? Where did you graduate from?
I went to Northwest Missouri State University.
Maryville.
Maryville, yes.
At one point, were you an accounting major?
I was. That was my freshman year. Yeah.
Okay. You were an accounting major, and is that more like how does that come about? Is that just something you felt like was natural? Like it was going to make money? Was that something that your parents maybe got you wanted to do? That was what you wanted to do? Like what?
I took accounting classes in high school, accounting one and two, and for the most part it was pretty easy to me. And I knew that if I were to do this, I'd make a lot of money doing it. So I was like, all right, you know, I get it for the most part, and it's pretty simple. So I can make a career out of this because I know I'll make money. And then I went to college for my freshman year. I took one math class and I got so frustrated with that math class that I said, I don't ever want to do numbers again.
Interesting.
So I was like, this is not me. So then I realized, I need to find something else. Like, so that made me change like my whole career. And then during that summer, going into my sophomore year, I remember I was watching this Mace and Sway in the Morning interview. And I just thought it was so cool to just see Sway interviewing Mace, who's one of my favorite rappers ever. And I thought to myself, you know, that'd be pretty cool to just interview my favorite rappers and talk to them about music. Like, that'd be really dope to me. And so since I'm not a rapper, that would be a way for me to get into the music industry. Because I always wanted to be a part of hip hop, but I didn't want to rap. So
what made you, why not want to, like, did you try making music and then kind of like realize you didn't enjoy the process or you didn't like what the end result sounded like or anything like that? Did you ever at any point make music? Because you love music.
Yeah.
Did you ever try to make music yourself?
No, like there was times where I was like, maybe I could be a rapper, but it was just that the artists I was listening to as a kid growing up were just so complex and deep and so insane to me lyrically and like how they presented their music. I thought to myself, there's no way I could ever like write an Andre 3000 type verse, like, or write a verse like Nas or Hov. Like those were like the bar of like rappers when I was growing up. So in my mind, I'm like, I can't write no shit that Hov writes. You know what I'm saying? Like that's the bar. Like I'm not going to meet that. So I was like, I don't want to do that. Plus it always felt cliche just to say, like, oh, I'm a rapper, especially like growing up when, you know, we're all teenagers. So everybody was making music and it just didn't feel right. I didn't want to be another rapper in the mix. So I was like, I got to figure out something, some other way I can make an impact in the culture.
Yeah. That's this is like the at least the second time I've heard somebody go from like really fiscal stuff, but I think they finished the class and everything like that, but maybe just something more creative. And and then you ended up like working in broadcast, or you graduated with a broadcasting area major?
It's kind of both, because I was still in college when I got hired at Hot 103 Jams.
Yeah. Okay.
So I had like another year left of college when Hot 103 Jams hired me. So during
how
the school,
did that even happen?
They thought I was graduating or I already graduated when they hired me. So when my fifth year came around and I was about to go back to Maryville, they were like, okay, we thought you graduated, but here's what we'll do. Like, if you keep your grades up, like, we'll let you come back to Kansas City on the weekends to work on air.
Nice.
When you're done on Sunday, you can go back to Maryville and we'll just like keep doing that.
And what's that? I know a little bit. I don't know if I ever went to Maryville, but I've heard I don't know if it's true. It's like a party school. Like it like should be going down out there.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe not anymore because you know times change. Okay. But at my time, we was kicking it. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So like that's something I kind of got a vibe. I don't know why I never went up there. I know some people up there. But what's the commute like?
About an hour and a half. We're about.
Oh, it's actually not okay.
Yeah. So we're about 30 minutes away from St. Joe.
Oh, okay.
Or, I don't say we, but I'm not out there. Yeah. But Maryville's 30 minutes away from St. Joe, about an hour away from Omaha.
Okay. That's not terrible, but it like after like classes and maybe doing like a whole fucking thing out like on work and everything, like, it's a bit of a fucking commute.
Yeah. Them Fridays and Sunday drives be kind of brutal.
Yeah, absolutely. But like everything after that just becomes easy though. Like you was able to manage or juggle all the like bullshit that comes with just being like a student and then the work. And it was paid work?
Yes.
That's dope.
Yeah, so I was getting paid to be on the radio.
Which is crazy. Which seems like a cheat code. Like, you would have done it for free, probably. I don't know.
Yeah, because I was an intern with them the summer prior to that.
Yeah.
So I was already, you know, doing it for free for a minute.
Yeah, for sure. And do you maybe, and I was in a situation like this actually recently, but do you have any advice for anybody that maybe you're going through like the first couple of months or maybe years or something like that in some sort of like new profession or something? Or...
Yeah, I guess the best thing I could offer you is just to keep pushing through it, because the first like year or so is going to be a little weird because you're trying to find your footing in uncharted territory for you.
Yeah.
So when I first got into radio, I didn't know anything about radio other than the music aspect. So I was just like all music driven. But there's like a whole other side of being on the radio that you have to account for, and mostly being you, like your personality, who you are on the radio. So like my first year doing radio in college, it was very dry. Like when I listen to my old air checks, I speak a lot slower. I speak more clearly though, because I was more focused on my delivery and sounding clear. So speaking loud and clear. And then once I got that part of the game down, then I started adding more character to it. And that's how you get the flavor and the pizzazz and the whole personality.
Nice. That's super dope. Because I would think that I tend to have the opposite where I talk too fast and I have to consciously try to slow down. So it was like the opposite for you. But I wonder if you maybe like get into something, you have like this romantic view of what it is. You love the music, you love the culture, all that kind of stuff. But then you run into the business of things and it's like that kind of like clash of how you think it should go, or like, you know what I'm saying? Or how it is. Like, yeah. Did that ever happen? Was that like hard to get over? Or was you just the type of dude who like, whatever it is, I'm gonna figure out how to get what I want out of it or something? Like,
yeah. So like early on, you just realize there's more than radio than just playing what songs sound good, you know? So like, I remember like when EXO Tour Life by Lil Uzi first came out on SoundCloud, and I sent it to the program director of Hot 103. I was like, yo, this new Lil Uzi song is crazy. Like it's gonna be big, but it was on SoundCloud and it wasn't like what it became yet. So eventually, like a month or two down the road, it does go to radio and it does go number one and it does crazy numbers on the air. But at the time, like it didn't get on the radio immediately when I sent it. It took a minute for the momentum to get behind it. So there's a saying in radio that our program director says is that, you know, we don't make hits, we play hits.
I was just thinking, I wasn't going to put it that succinct, but that's interesting. It's not proactive, it's more reactive, which is frustrating, probably. The song needs to prove itself before it could even get there.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, I understand it, but that shit is frustrating though. But you probably got some credibility from that though.
I like to think so. You know, I don't walk around like, I got Lil Uzi on the radio, Hot 103. Like, I'm not doing all that. But like, when it made the air, I was like, all right, cool. So like, I had something. Like, I knew something was going on with this. And I knew I was like, right with something. So
yeah,
it's cool just to have that little, like, I helped bring that here.
For sure. And I get this, like, I don't know, man. People really don't have imagination, I get the sense. Like, it's, like, the fact that it's on SoundCloud is something that, like, probably diminishes anybody's ability to, like, really understand what's going on here and all that kind of stuff. But, like, I don't know. It's do you kind of understand what I'm saying? I probably don't use the best words, but, like, yeah.
Yeah, because, like, especially that time, SoundCloud was just, like, that thing over here.
Yeah.
I still think it's viewed that way. It's kind of what the underground is,
how
it's viewed in like the mainstream eyes. So like anything that's popping on SoundCloud is not usually going to make it to radio because it's all like independent artists, independent music. So there's not a machine behind it yet.
Yeah.
And then eventually, you know, all those artists that were popping on SoundCloud, the Kodak Blacks, Playboi Cartis, Lil Uzis, Yachty's, you know, they ended up going to the next level, getting a machine behind them. And now they're all huge stars like on a mainstream level.
Mm.
So they grew past SoundCloud. They were able to break that, go through that ceiling.
Interesting. Do you think you offer a point of view that could be useful to artists?
I like to think so.
I feel like you do.
Thank you.
Yeah. Like, do you kind of understand what I'm saying? Like, it's like,
instead of looking at you or like the radio stations and all that kind of stuff as an obstacle, instead of like that, like maybe like, hey, what does it take? Like, what are they looking for? Whatever.
Yeah. Like if artists ever wanted to ask me about like, how do I get on the radio? Like I'll tell them straight up, but yeah, it's a little bit deeper than just like, you know, there's more that has to go into it. Like, do you have momentum in your city? Like, do people demand to hear your music when they go out? Like, are people coming to your shows?
Yeah.
There's a lot of factors that go into it. You have to show that you have momentum, you have a movement, and you have people that are into what you do.
Yeah.
So it's just like, you know, building up yourself first, because we could play you on Hot 103 Jams, but if you're not ready for that moment, it's not going to mean anything to you or your song.
Yeah.
So it's like, we could play your song, but what are you going to do with it after that?
Mm-hmm. Nice. And not only that, live events?
Yep, we do live events, we do productions, live shows, we put out an album, yada yada album.
Let's go.
And then on the podcasting side, I am one of the hosts for the Yada Yada podcast.
Nice.
So I like to dabble my hands on all different kind of avenues that involve just like being a creative in the media field, because I just want to expand like what I can do and then what I bring to the table when I approach people about things that I do.
Nice. And do you think, I get the sense that, well, something I admire, I feel like people got a lot of like main character syndrome, but I get the sense that you like really enjoy being a platform for talent. Like you actually do care about other people in the city and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And do you think like hosting is like a personality, or is that a skill that you could develop? Like what is like, what is the thing with hosting? Does it take prep, or is it just a talent? Is it a skill?
Yeah, it's definitely a skill. And it's funny, cause I could tell when I see somebody hosting, if they've ever hosted before or if they do this a lot.
Yeah.
Cause I think a lot of people today that want to be hosts for events and whatnot, I feel like they just attention seekers. So the way I host it very particular. Like I'm not a person that's gonna go on stage and just scream into the mic for an hour while the DJ plays music. I absolutely hate those hosts with everything in my body, dog. I hate that style of hosting so much. Cause it's like, as a consumer, I'm just trying to hear the music and vibe out. And if somebody wants to talk into a mic, let the DJ do that. He's playing the music, let him talk. If you're not playing music, just shut the fuck up, please. Stop yelling into the mic. I'm trying to hear the song.
You see, you can simultaneously understand the needs of the audience and still be present and like do the thing, which I really fucking appreciate. I just don't understand how people don't understand that like there's somebody on the other side of this. Like, you know, like they're here for a thing and it's not you.
We're not here to listen to you talk over music for an hour before the show starts, dog. We're trying to get the vibe right and you fucking it up. So with me, how I host, I think it does have, you have to have like a sort of main character syndrome when it comes to hosting, because you have to be able to get the audience's attention.
Mm.
So my job as a host is that when it's time for the show to start and you need me to get the audience's attention, I will do that.
Mm.
So I approach hosting like I was a WWE wrestler. I used to watch wrestling a lot as a kid, and The Rock was my favorite wrestler. And I just loved how whenever The Rock would come out, everybody would erupt when he walks in the ring, and then when he gets in the ring, he would just stand there and everybody would just go crazy waiting for him to speak. And I always thought that was the coolest shit ever, to be able to just demand attention like that. So that's how I approach hosting, where it's like, I'll go on stage, I'll do what I need to do to get the crowd's attention, interact with them a little bit, and then ask them if they're ready for the show. Now we bring out the artist. Like, I'm not up there kikiing and bullshitting for like 2 minutes. Like, I'm just trying to get in, entertain y'all, and get out as fast as possible. Nice. Cause it's not about me. I am a host, but you're not here to see me talk for an hour or 30 minutes before the show. Yeah. Like, you're here to see the artist.
Yeah, absolutely. You can definitely enhance the experience, but, and maybe in a lot of cases, you probably aren't the experience.
Yeah, like you can make it enjoyable,
but
it's not about you.
Yeah.
And that's something I've come to terms with a lot, or come to terms with what I do.
Yeah.
So like my job, I look at it as, it's not about me. It's about like, how can I make those around me look good?
Nice.
And that's like the number one trait as a media personality, especially if you're going to be somebody that interviews people.
Yeah.
It's like, how can I make this person look like a big deal to my audience?
Yeah.
Because they're a big deal to me. So how can I make that come across to them?
That's interesting. And there's like a counterintuitive thing to where like, the more you kind of maybe think like that, the better you are at the fucking job.
Exactly.
The better you are at the fucking
thing. Like, this is like probably the most selfless job. You got to be the most selfless person as a media host or a media personality or interviewer.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I may be a great interviewer, but whoever I'm sitting across has got to be the draw.
Yeah.
It's got to be the attraction. It just may be cooler for my audience that they're talking to me.
Yeah.
So if my audience or people that fuck with me see me talking to like Denzel Curry or Jay Worthy, that may be like, oh shit, like that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So like, you know, you got to make it worthwhile for
whoever's sitting down with you. Yeah, and it's like, you know, everybody's time is valuable. So I want to make sure if I'm sitting down with you for an interview, like I'm going to make you look good because that's my job. That's why I wanted to interview you.
Absolutely. I guess this is like stuff that I never really would have thought about, but it's definitely like a thing, like a crucial leg of like whether you want to say like the music industry or culture or anything like that, but music journalism. And it's, you mentioned Sway and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. That's like music journalism, right?
Yeah.
So like,
I'll consider that.
Do you think like what is the current state of it? Is it healthy right now? Is it not healthy right now? Are there people that you respect doing it right now?
Mm-hmm.
Because and I'm thinking more broadly, like generally, like nationally and all that kind of stuff. I'm not necessarily sure about Kansas City or anything, if you have any thoughts on that. But like, what do you think about whether it's specifically hip hop or just music journalism in general?
I think music journalism and journalism is like in like a potential to be in a good place, but also like a potential to be in a bad place.
Yeah.
So it's just like the access for music journalists these days is so limited because it's like artists can now pick and choose who they want to sit down with, which is cool because they have that freedom. But then that also limits like the broadness of their scope of like what they're willing to talk about and whatnot. So I don't know. It's just kind of weird because like media is changing and we're seeing art before our eyes. Like I heard Cameron say he's the new journalist. And I was like, that's cool, but we need to pump the brakes a little bit because there's a sense of like morality and code when it comes to being a journalist. And I think a lot of people today don't understand that. And they think just because they have a TikTok or they have a following on social media and they make videos talking about events that makes them a journalist. Like, no, that's not a journalist. That's just an internet personality. And to be a journalist, there's a lot of integrity that goes behind it, but it also takes a sense of truth. And a lot of people today don't want to be honest with artists, musicians, entertainers in general, because they don't want to lose access to them. Because now access is so frugal. And artists can decide who they want to sit down with and who they don't. So nobody's really getting like a good interview these days because everybody's sitting down with those that they want to talk to as opposed to like, you know.
It makes me think about sports because I forgot where I heard this from, but like there's this idea of like new media.
Yeah, Draymond Green. And
like
all
direct
them.
Access to the consumer and to the audience now. Like it's no, like these guys don't need a proxy anymore and they could kind of feel like they can control the message. Like, there'll be some report out there about Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson will just literally just go on Twitter and within a couple words be like, this is not true. This is objectively not true or something like that. And like direct access. And it's kind of like Cam and Mace. So like, not only do they not need it, they can, like you say, choose who they want to talk to. And then all of a sudden, if, you know, sometimes uncomfortable conversations have to happen for truth or maybe really interesting things or useful things to the audience to come about. Why would you put yourself through that when you could just tweet?
It's
tweet
like
yourself and all that kind of stuff. So that's really interesting, the direct access to the audience to change things.
And it's like, last night me and my roommate were talking about how Donald Glover did this interview for Interview Magazine where he interviewed himself. I'm like, dog, there's so much I want to know about you. And I just don't think I'm going to learn that from you interviewing yourself. Because then there's nobody there to actually push back on what you say. If you say something maybe they might not agree with, or if you say something controversial, no one's going to press you about it or actually explain more in detail what you mean by that. So it's kind of like, you know, they could softball pitches to themselves. So like nowadays we're seeing a lot of artists do like their own editorials.
Interesting. What does that mean? Editorial
it's like
is...
they write an article about themselves.
Oh,
like Travis Scott did one for XXL. And it's just like we're losing, like, because I love a good interview. And I think that's such a lost art form, maybe because artists don't like doing interviews. And a lot of media personalities today aren't great interviewers. They don't know what to talk about. And it annoys me when I see a radio personality or a media personality, internet personality, whatever, like interview an artist I would love to talk about. And then they always say like, so man, when's your project coming out? And then the artist goes, it's out now. And they're like, oh man, sorry, the intern didn't tell me that. I'm like, all right, man, you're not even studying up on the interview yourself. You're having an intern bring you questions. Like, that's just lazy to me. And it's just, I hate watching people take those opportunities for granted because it's like, I would like kill for those moments.
Yeah, that's a whole nother thing. So lack of preparation, but that's actually super interesting. And on top of that, like on my end, whenever I'm looking at filmmakers and stuff like that, I know which ones not to listen to anymore because they're more interested in myth making and all that kind of stuff. Like they're too busy trying to tell a story about themselves that's useful for their own profession and to get shit done. that's not useful to me. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, as like an aspiring whatever. Like,
yeah, I can't apply that to my style or what I'm trying to do.
So like, it's that is, yeah. But like, I would have that urge, like as a potential like artist and all that kind of stuff. And as I don't know, I am an artist or whatever. But like, I have this urge to like control the narrative, you know what I'm saying? Like slow releasing information. And I don't want to be asked certain things and all that kind of stuff. So I have that too. But yeah, I guess it would be super useful to have somebody who, but then the incentives are fucked. Because you can't really press people on the important stuff or things that matter. Because there goes your access. How do you fucking, like, you've been behind the scenes on all this shit. I guess it's just like, it's just done. Music journalism is fucked. It's over.
Yeah, because it's like, no one really wants to, like, get asked the hard-hitting questions. No one wants to, you know, get any bad PR or nothing like that. So we're not really left with a whole lot.
Yeah.
And
I guess the Rec Rubens are, I guess it just has to be people that they respect. Like, I guess other creators, it's like actors on actors. Or musicians on musicians, or athletes acting like talking to. I guess it's just you have to be in the arena to be able to get somebody to open up, and somebody. I guess trust is like the biggest currency now, or something like that.
Yeah,
now.
Like knowing you won't make me look bad.
Something like that. Yeah, because they know. I don't know. That's interesting. Yeah, because it seems like it really is people who are.
And it'd be funny because if you watch the new media stuff, especially with like NBA players, are essentially becoming the media, the sports personalities that they hated. And they started a podcast for it to like rebel against. It's like the cycle just always eventually repeats itself. Everybody wants to, when they start something new and they're, you know, like new media, like the athletes did, they always swear they're not going to become those that that bicker against them in the media. But eventually they become just them. Like everybody falls into the game when it comes to media personality and like how to be when they get a big platform after a certain while. And it's just like, you became everything you said you weren't going to become.
It was the incentives all along.
Yeah, like once the money starts talking.
Absolutely. All of a sudden you got Ryan Clark calling like quarterback's ass and all that kind of
stuff. Yeah, like this is not you, dog.
You just retired 4 years ago.
Yeah, like dog, you were a great analysis. You don't need to say that.
Yeah, exactly. It's how, I guess, I asked you about the year and you just got done hosting Lemon Fest.
Yeah, Lemons.
Lemons. Am I saying Lemon Fest or is it Lemons?
It's Lemons.
Lemons and LMNS. That was an acronym as well?
Yeah.
That was an acronym for something else as
well? Love and Memories Never Stop.
Nice, nice. Is hosting part of like setting up the whole thing, or are you just like responsible just for your duties, or were you like part of like the setting up of the event and all that kind of stuff?
No, I was just responsible for hosting.
Okay. So. How did that go, and how is Kansas City's, has there been hip-hop related festivals in Kansas City? Is that like a new phenomenon that people are trying to build and build a little bit of a tradition or something like that?
Lemons is the first one I've seen from a local standpoint, outside of Boulevardia.
Yeah.
But I really don't count that like a hip-hop fest.
That's not,
exactly. In any means.
Yeah.
The closest thing we had was the Flower Fest, which was what Mammoth was doing in Bonner Springs once a summer. I think it started in 2016.
Mammoth Fest?
Or Flower Fest.
Flower Fest, okay.
It was put together by Mammoth.
Okay, got it.
So they were doing that once a year in the summer starting in 2016. And they were doing it consistently every year. Like they brought Cardi B here, the last one I went to. The first one had like Gucci Mane, Ray Shrimmer, Playboi Carti, Lil Uzi Vert. Like it was tight, a lot of potential. The lineups got a little iffy after the first one. The last one was really good. Cardi B, 21 Savage, Kodak Black. And then the one they were going to do before that or after that was going to be ASAP Rocky, Playboi Carti, I think Young and May, somebody else. And this was in 2019, 2020, but then the pandemic happened.
Oh, okay.
And then ever since then, they haven't done one since.
Ah, son of a bitch.
Yeah.
But that seemed like a pretty fucking big deal. Do you, we'll start small. We'll start, and see, that's probably fucked up when I say that, but we'll start with the more local-minded stuff like Kansas City music. Mm-hmm. I want to ask some questions, but I'm not really tapped in. Like, I don't know. I really don't know. I want to ask about specific artists, but maybe I should just ask about music in general. What do you think about Kansas City? Do you think it's trending? Do you think it is like it's slept on? Do you think how do you think about, I guess I don't even know what to ask, but like, what is your thoughts on hip hop in Kansas City?
In Kansas City?
Yeah.
I think it's the best it's probably ever been as a whole, as a community and as a scene. It seems like it's more vibrant. It's more upbeat. It's actually stuff you can look up to. Like I was talking to my homie, my roommate, about how like it's gonna be funny how from like 10, 15 years from now, we may not realize it now, but we may find out like there was some kids in Kansas City that looked up to like what we were doing or like what this artist was doing or what I'm doing or what this person's doing. And we don't know it yet until like 5 to 10 years down the line when we start to see them grow up. And I think that's what's going to happen, because the scene to me is like the coolest it's ever been. Right. Like, this is probably the best point I've seen it be in since I've got active in it in 2017.
Nice.
So it's definitely on the rise, and it's definitely cool seeing all these different little bubbles start to like bubble up a little bit in the city.
Okay, nice. In Kansas City, I've heard some stuff from artist's point of view. And do you think, are there obstacles in Kansas City for like hip hop or rap or anything like that to like maybe become what like is stereotypically like kind of, I've heard some people say that like Memphis is the new Atlanta and all that kind of stuff, but we know about Atlanta, we know about LA, we know about New York, Chicago and everything like that. Is there any obvious obstacles to Kansas City being that? Is it that maybe people just don't know?
I think the biggest obstacle we have is that we just don't really have much like history on a national scale.
Okay.
In the music scene. Okay. We have our own history and our own culture here in the city, but it's not nationwide or mainstream at any level. Like Tech N9ne is the only Kansas City culture that's made it to like the mainstream, and now Sleazy's kind of breaking through that, so he's opened up more doors and more eyes for that. But if you look at places like Memphis, Atlanta, New York, Chicago, like they all have like cultural history that has expanded to the mainstream and worldwide, so they have more eyes on them because they have that. Where us, we're still like a brand new city. Like we just won the Super Bowl twice, like in the last 5 years. We won a World Series 2016. So like people are just like catching on to us through that, and that's how we're getting more exposure. And that exposure is helping the artists get more eyes on them. You see Sleazy, he blows up on the mainstream level. Then that brings more eyes to us. You know, he's bringing D-Walk on stage with him. He's doing songs with MB58. So it's just like, you know, it's just like a brick by brick process. It's not going to happen overnight. This has really been happening and building since like 2016 in the city. Like all the stars in Kansas City on the local scene that are doing big things now have been working hard since 2016. So this ain't like just happened overnight. It's just been building over time. And as they build, they get better. Their branding gets better, their visuals get better, their marketing gets better. Everybody's elevating over the years. And that's the beauty of it. So it's like we're on the rise because everybody that's doing things the right way is elevating the right way.
Nice. Absolutely. Is there, because you did answer a couple more questions. I was going to ask, do you think it's more like an artist? It's on the back of a specific artist that needs to break through? Is it more like we need to Joe Cornels who want to like be platforms for talent? Do you think there's the talent is not there? Do you think the audience has been trained to like look for hip hop or appreciate it or anything like that? What do you think?
I think it kind of comes down to a variety of factors.
Okay.
I think the audience has got to like catch on a little bit more on the local level. Okay. It's just that if you're not in the scene and if you're just a casual music listener, if somebody comes up to you and says, hey, I'm a rapper, your first instinct is gonna be like, all right, you know, it's not gonna be a good reaction if somebody just told you down the street. So it's kind of hard for that to catch on.
In general or here in Kansas City?
I think in general, but in Kansas City specifically, because Kansas City just doesn't like new shit. So we're a very tricky entertainment city.
Kansas City doesn't like new shit.
We want to be modern, but we don't want to be too modern. It's like we want to hear new music, but not too new that we can't dance to because we don't know it. And so it's just hard to like win over that average consumer in Kansas City on a local level if you're trying to sell music to them. So I think that's the thing. I think when it comes to the artist standpoint, I think one of the things that are holding us back is just that a lot of artists aren't active as much as I would like them to.
And what is active? I mean, producing music?
Or like just being a rapper to the public eye. Because a lot of times what happens is that people will put out a project, be outside for like a month, and then just go back to hibernation until they have something else to present. You know, there's different ways to keep your name out there. And so I think they got to figure out new ways or more ways to put their name out there, stay active, stay out in the scene, stay out in front of people. That way you could present yourself as a musician consistently. And it's not just, man, I haven't heard so-and-so in like 6-7 months. What are they up to? Oh, they got no pictures on their IG. They must get ready to drop something.
Okay.
And then I think the most important thing is that like the performance aspect of the local town here. Because we have a lot of great performers, but it's like if you really want to elevate and rise above the crop, like you have to be able to present your music in a live format and do it well. Because that's when you're really going to win over people. Because if you could perform a song I never heard before at a really high energy level that captures me in that moment and makes me a fan, like that's going to resonate with me more than ever finding your music on SoundCloud would ever do.
Interesting.
Because it's like I got to live in that moment with you and I got to feel your energy performing the song, and it was so powerful that it made me a fan. And I never heard of you. Like those, Like those moments are gonna get are what's gonna make people want to like ride with you to the very end on your career. Okay. And so I think in hip hop, performances have gotten so lazy as of late that it kind of just wears off on everybody. It trickles down. So when we see big time artists, you know, phoning it in and getting checks regardless, it kind of trickles down to a local level where it's like, all right, well, I saw a little baby perform like this. So like, why do I need to change anything up?
Do you think the population like shows up for these artists? Do you think it's more on the artist to make it like undeniable for us to go? Like, what do you?
Yeah, it's like a little bit of both. Like, I mean, first and foremost, I think it does fall on the artist because at the end of the day, like you are the one pushing what you, your brand and your music. So you have to make it feel like we have to be a part of whatever it is you got going on. So you have to build that fan base organically and that movement organically.
You're fighting Netflix.
Yeah.
You're fighting the couch. Like maybe, I'm not sure if it was the same fight that they were fighting in the past. I don't know about the blog era. Like I only know about the blog era because I follow you. I don't know about eras and hip hop and all that kind of stuff. But like, it takes a lot to get people up out the couch and stuff like that. So I'm sympathetic and all that kind of stuff, but I'm curious. I'm more like a self-critical person and I'm not the type of person to kind of like blame others and all that kind of stuff and be like, yo, they don't show up. They don't whatever, whatever.
Yeah. But like, and it's like, you could go that route, but it's just going to make you better. And it's not going to get you anywhere you want to go. Cause now you're just like shitting on the people you want to support you. And then so they're not going to want to support you now. If you whine, it's like Wale has this weird cloud over his career because like there was that time period where he was just complaining about not getting recognition, not getting like numbers on lists and stuff. And just after a while, people started viewing him differently because like, bro, you just complain all the time.
Yeah.
We don't want that.
It's like, off-putting. It's off-putting.
It's like entitlement.
Yeah.
And people don't want to deal with that if you haven't put in work yet.
Not at all. And I almost wonder whether or not, and I'm not sure about this, we come to hip hop for like a different reason, like almost the opposite reason. We come for confidence and stuff like that. We want to borrow that shit. Like, we want to read the lyrics and, like, get a little bit of that. Like, I never really actually thought about this, and maybe this is, like, a dumb question, but why do we go to rap? Why do we go to hip-hop?
For me, personally, it's just because I feel like it was something that I could relate to because it feels like me.
Yeah.
Like, the music feels like my life and what I represent as a person, what I feel as a person, and what I want to be as a person.
Yeah.
And, like, confidence. Like, it made me feel, like, powerful. Like, when I first heard I Got Five on as a kid, I was like, I don't know what it is about this song, but I feel really cool. It makes me feel energetic, makes me feel cool, like I'm on top of the world and I'm the coolest guy in the room. I don't know why, but that's where it all started for me. And that's kind of where it just led on. And then, you know, as you get older, you start picking up more on like introspective songs and stories they tell. And like, oh, this could be my life, or he's been through stuff that I've been through, so I can relate to that. And if he made it, despite being going through what I went through as well, then I can make it as well. So it's like hope, confidence, inspiration, a lot of different factors that I go to hip hop for.
Super dope. Absolutely.
So I think I might know the answer, but like, who are some of the performers that, like, who are some of the legendary hip hop performers that you've seen?
That I've seen? Let's see. Damn. I saw Kanye West and Jay-Z on Watch the Throne.
Yeah.
That was...
I figured I was going to hear the first name for sure. I didn't know 100%, but
yeah.
You said, damn, I got to say his name.
Yeah, I was like, Kanye. Oh, that Kanye. That fucking Kanye, man. But
he's in the news for all types of stuff. And we're not even going to get into like a lot of this stuff. But he did say one thing one time. Because I get the sense, like, I'm kind of like, I wonder whether or not I might be like on the autistic spectrum or some shit like that. Or maybe I didn't have an older brother. So like I had to like get bullied into learning shit and all that kind of stuff. Whether it was, I never got introduced to music and all that kind of stuff. But he said something that clarified the thing. Like we always talk about the culture. And you got to kind of contextually understand that word. It's never really explained what that means.
Yeah, it's just very broad.
The culture. But like he said something one time that the culture is women. And I think he was talking specifically maybe black women, but just women.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I think he said Drake is the culture.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Cause he has women's attention or something like that. Mm-hmm. And if you could do that, then you've got everything else. Cause there's like a food chain, like women want men. I mean, men want women and all that kind of stuff. And is there some sort of like lack of understanding on what actually matters or something like that, maybe sometimes with artists? Or is that like a higher, is this assessment even right?
It's right. Cause you know, like Pac told Biggie when they first met, like, yeah, dog, you gotta make music for the ladies cause that's who's gonna buy your shit. And if the ladies like it, dude's gonna have to rock with it cause they gotta play with what the girls wanna hear. And so like, you know, and if you look at hip hop, you know, it's like the big three is like money, cash, hoes type shit. You know, money, clothes, hoes is like the big three, the holy trinity of hip hop. So like, It's definitely one of the reasons why people like to rap. You know what I'm saying? People like of hip hop, like, you know, Biggie said it, money, clothes, hoes, and that's what everybody's been rolling with it since. So, but that's just kind of like, you know, like the foundation of a lot of artists. Like, of course, there's artists that don't always move like that, but any rapper that tells you they don't like the attention from females is lying to you.
Yeah. And I wonder if that kind of understanding of things, or like, maybe it's harder than some, I mean, easier said than done, but I remember hearing that and I'm like, it's just so clarifying. Everything makes sense after that, after you said that. And I'm not saying necessarily that's like maybe the truest thing in the world, but it definitely makes sense. And it makes me think that like the dudes who really break through, they got a secret. They know something that nobody else knows. It's kind of like uncommon wisdom. Mm-hmm. There's like common wisdom, and that's like inflection, how to sound good on the mic, all that kind of stuff. But then there's uncommon wisdom, and that's like how like the greats in whatever domain end up breaking through.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I'm always curious on like, is it the audience that can't? Because I get the sense that, like, you know, I know there's talent here. Like, I've come in direct contact with the shit.
Yeah.
And I just don't get the sense that it matters here.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, is it the audience? Is it the talent? Like, are they confused on what matters? Is it not consistent? Is it, I don't know, but I'm always curious about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think we definitely got the talent to be successful. I think it's just hard to win here. Like, you got to win the world first before you win Kansas City. It's what it kind of feels like sometimes.
Interesting.
And it's like, once you win the world, then Kansas City be like, man, we always knew you were great. Wow. But, you know, that's just part of the game. You're going to be famous everywhere else except your hometown.
So, oh, no way.
Yeah. So, like, if you're an artist and you blow up, like, you'll be famous. You'll be crazy famous and loved in, like, L.A. or Chicago. But when you come back to your hometown, it made it like, bro, you ain't that cool.
That's interesting. I didn't. That sounds true, actually. I don't know what that, like, I never come in contact with that type of thing, but that actually sounds like it'd be true. Wow. Okay. All right. Aside from that, I'm trying to think if there's, oh yeah. Music this year.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about, because, you know, there's some broad narratives. It seems like hip hop is kind of floundering a little bit. It's something about not charting in the billboards, whatever this mm-hmm. year, the state of hip hop in general. Is it overblown how bad maybe things are? Are things worse than people would understand? Is it people just confused on, like, if you're just tired of what hip hop is doing this year, you might be just tired of hip hop or something like that. Like what's going on?
I think it just needs a hard reset.
Huh.
And that's what's about to happen. Because I don't know. I don't equate like Billboard success to if hip hop's dying or alive or not. Because it never started on the Billboard charts. Mm. So it's not like that was the end all be all for hip hop success. It just became the number one genre for like 4 or 5 years. And now it's not. Mm. And I think that's cool, because I think the problem is that once all that money got into hip hop because it became the number one genre, you started seeing an influx of all these random rappers start rapping because it was a hustle. Like, oh, there's a lot of money to be made here. It could be easy, it could be quick, depending on how fast we blow up. Let's give it a shot. And then that's why you see like all these rappers would be like, yeah, I started rapping like a year ago. And then I caught lightning in a bottle. Now I'm a huge star. But then you see them perform live on festivals and they just do not look comfortable, or they don't have a catalog extensive enough to tour because they don't really have like the reps yet to fully craft songs on the fly whenever they need to. Or when they do craft a song fly on the fly, it sounds similar to the last song that we just heard by them. So there's not many styles for them to try.
Mm.
And I think that's kind of where we're at. Like, people are just kind of fed up with just the repetitiveness of the sound that we're hearing commercially in hip hop.
Mm.
But if you dive a little deeper, there's always going to be different pockets and sounds that you could dive into if you're a hip hop fan. So like if the commercial music isn't working for you, there's somebody on the lower tier scales that will satisfy your music needs.
And I'm gonna sound super, like, I know I'm gonna sound old as fuck and sound like a dad or some shit, but on what level would you put somebody like Playboi Carti or something like that? Is that mainstream? Is that like lower? Is that like niche?
I would say he's mainstream because his fan base is so big and powerful.
Okay.
Like, he has one of the more powerful fan bases in hip hop.
Okay, so that is hip hop, right? That's not.
Oh yeah.
Okay, because But so like rock star, he seems like a rock star, but like, is it hip hop? Is it?
Because it's like, if you look at Whole Lotta Red, there was a song on there called Stop Breathing, where it's just like this, and that album they call like the rage sound, which is like rock. infused, right? So on that, on the hook on that one, he says, take my shirt off, watch the hoe stop breathing. And he's doing it over like a rock slash rage type beat. And it's hip hop because even though it doesn't sound hip hop in that moment, the take my shirt off, watch the hoe stop breathing, that's a Gucci Mane bar from back in the day. So he just took a Gucci Mane line, put it in his own song, but threw a rock beat behind it instead. So even though it sounds sonically like a rock song almost, there's still hip hop elements in there if you just know where to pick up on it at or catch
it. Interesting. Yeah, because I'm starting to realize that because every, in my sense, is like almost every era or subgenre of music is like a reaction to what came before. So there was like classical music, then there was jazz. Jazz was like a freestyle version of that. Like it was just like punk jazz, whatever you, I mean, punk classical. Then there's rock and then there's punk rock. And then like, I'm getting the sense that rap is starting to get into like a punk phase to where, I ended up coming up with a name for it, calling it anti-vibe. It's like, it's like, it's my nephew puts it on and he doesn't even listen. He just looks at my face because he wants a reaction. He just wants me to look disgusted. And I'm disgusted because the shit is like breaking every like rule that I know in my head. And I'm not even like well versed on the rules. Like, what's the, where's the fucking melody? It's breaking it. Like, this shit isn't even consistent. It's like a new thing every single single cycle.
It's like this new this new wave. Like, I was like, Playboi Carti put out 3 songs before, like recently, right? And it's just funny because it's just like he just said, fuck the idea of song structure. Like, it doesn't exist in my head because there's no structure to these songs. Like, there's like not a hook. There's not a melody, a bridge. Like, you know, there's nothing that builds it into a song. It's just vibes. And it's the craziest shit ever because it still sounds good. Like, I like that because it's something new. Even if I may not like it, like, he's trying something new. And I can respect that because that's what's going to help hip hop grow or make music grow.
I have more questions about this, but I'm actually curious. Do you consider yourself like unique in being more open-minded than others? Or like, is that just how you are? Or do you get the sense that like other people are kind of like, okay, I'll fuck with it. If it's good, it's good. Or just,
It just really depends on your love for music.
Okay.
Cause if you're a casual music listener, I'm not going to play you the new Playboi Carti and think, what do you think, bro? It's crazy, ain't it? No, I'm not going to do that. Like, but I like to consider myself open to new sounds and new ideas because that's just like how, that's how life is. You got to be able to adapt to like what's happening in the now. Like, I don't like getting trapped in nostalgia too much because then you just get kind of stuck there. And you'll see that a lot. Like, if you go to P&L, you won't hear any song past 2009. And I can't stand it because it's like, there's so much cooler music that's been made since 2009 that we could enjoy right now in this moment, but you refuse to move on. And I can't stand people that are just stuck like that. And that's okay if you are like that. I just can't be around you very long. So like, I think I like to be open to new ideas and new sounds just so I can keep growing as a person.
Oh, that's super interesting. It might reflect other parts of your life. That's super interesting. And I've kind of reluctantly, like, he'll play me through all the songs and it'll be like one thing, like, all right, this shit is actually, I'm not trying to be an old man about it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, nah, 1999 is the best that it'll ever get and all that kind of thing. but it's like, you know, but then you see, I just don't know how to feel about a lot of this shit. Cause a lot of it breaks like kind of like old school rules on what it, like, on what it means to be a man and all that kind of stuff. And then like just visuals type stuff, like Tizo, I just look at him and it just, do you have anything of value to actually offer? Or is this all just shock value or something like that? But then you listen to it and it's like, there's like, this is an artist. He's a musician. Like, this is a musician. Like, it's, so like, I don't know how I feel about Tizo. I don't know what the fuck I'm looking at.
But his aesthetic is fire. And his branding, like how he.
Iconic.
Yeah. How he shapes his image and presents his videos and himself is really dope.
That stuff matters.
Yeah. It's like, sometimes it's, the image is cooler than the music. And I think that's what it is for a lot of artists today. But I think Tizo's somebody that his image is really cool and it helps elevate his music, but his music is good.
Okay.
There's certain elements into it that I can gravitate to. I'm like, okay, I see this is why people fuck with you. Like, he had a feature on Drake's new album that I thought was really great. Or his stuff on Travis Scott's album was really good.
Nice.
So I like him in spurts.
Nice. Thoughts on Drake. Me personally, and I'm going to drag you into like, because I feel like, there's like this, I consider myself very general audience. Like, I'm not like a niche, whatever, whatever. Like, so I'm gonna drag you into like the mainstream group chat where we talk about all that kind of stuff. There's like the big three. They always talk about the big three.
Drake, Kendrick, and Cole.
Do you think he belongs in that
Drake
three? Personally.
Me
personally, I just don't think you could put somebody who's, I don't consider him, is he a writer? I don't think he's a writer. He's with two writers.
He wrote 30 Hours.
So
by Kanye.
Okay, so
whatever
maybe he writes for other people, but there's not even like a whiff of a rumor that the other two have ever had ghostwriters or anything like that.
Yeah.
They're writers, they're true writers, I consider. And like, so like, is it ridiculous to even question why he would even be grouped in with the other two? Or it's like, actually, yeah, that belongs. It's them three.
I think with Drake, the reason I can see why I'd be skeptical is because like he's a pop artist mostly. And he has writers. But when you get to...
That's the end of the conversation.
I feel like if you look at it from just like a music standpoint, I could like... Okay, I'm trying to figure out how to word this. Okay, so with Drake, once you get to a certain level of commercial success, especially mainstream status and pop status like he has, a lot of them do have writers for their hits. If you look at every pop star, like even Beyonce, like she didn't write Girls Run the World. 11 people did. She may have had input, but 11 writers wrote that song for her.
What you're saying is something that like I think I know on some level, but I think whether it's fair or not, we just have different rules for rappers.
Mm-hmm.
And for you to be considered one of the greats, like you just, to me, I think you have to be a writer. Like you have to be the writer.
Yeah.
And I don't think, I think you just don't get to be grouped into that list. To me, it bothers me, but like I'm clearly proven wrong because First Person Shooter was like a whole thing, and Cole was like acknowledging him as like
so
that's like a whole thing. But like I was curious if like somebody who I consider like super like an IMDb of hip hop and all that kind of stuff. What you thought about
like,
that?
Yeah, I mean that's the writing situation. Like that's the reason I'll never consider Drake like a greatest of all time rapper. But I think his commercial success is so huge from a hip hop standpoint that he has to be part of the big three because it's like every time he drops an album, it's a huge deal, whether like commercially or the culture talks about it or if the music was good or it was bad. Like people are going to talk about Drake and what he's doing anytime he drops music.
Okay. Is it even fun or worthy to even ask what your rap Mount Rushmore is?
Rap Mount Rushmore?
You don't have to rank it, but just four?
Just four artists?
Is that even useful to even ask?
I could try to think of four real quick. So I have Pac on there. I have Kanye. Bad as it may sound. who else? I'll put Hov up there. And then I want to get somebody from the South just to show some love. Let's see, Mount Rushmore? Who's from the South? Who would I put in that spot? I feel like Andre 3000 is too cliche.
Okay.
You know, I'll put Future on there.
Future?
Just to shake it up a little bit. Okay. You know?
I didn't know where he's from. He's from Atlanta?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
He's actually related to Andre 3000.
I did not know.
He was part of his cousin, I think it's Rico Wade, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
So he has ties to the Dungeon family, which is what Outkast came up with.
Yeah, you just said five things I don't know anything about. That's Dungeon families. Yeah, you really know shit. Yeah. Have you ever thought about a book or anything like that? Or?
Yeah, it'd be cool. I just don't know what I'd write about. Yeah. Like, the motherfuckers want to read about my life. Yeah, like, it's been a lit life, but the motherfuckers really want to read about my life.
I was just saying, like, I feel like I only know like 8% of the music genre that I love the most. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't know anything. But
it's a big genre. It's got a deep history. It just hit 50 this year.
Yeah.
It's a lot. But yeah, man, you just got to really want to dive into it. Like the only reason I know a lot of stuff that I know is because like I dove into it during my formative years. So like when I had nothing but time on my hands and the internet, I would just watch YouTube videos all day on like music videos, songs, look up albums I never heard before, or classic albums. Like, oh, I need to hear this one. Mm. Haven't heard this one before. Play that on YouTube or, you know, look up stories, histories. Like I've always been fascinated just with like the history of hip hop and what it represents. So that always drew me to it, to want to know as much as I could about it.
Yeah.
So when I have music conversations, I just don't sound like a dweeb. So, like, you know, I like to sound like I know what I'm talking about if it's something I'm passionate about.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand. Yeah, for sure. And yeah, like you said, I think it did turn 50 this year.
Yeah.
Which was like a revelation to people. Like, even people in hip hop, like, they caught them off guard. And I think Atlanta didn't even do a thing for it or something like that. There was like concerts that happened and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, I guess it kind of like everybody
New got York celebrated it.
That, like, yeah. So, like, it might have been like Cool Herc or something like that, or that was like the beginning mm-hmm. of his first DJ party or something like that.
Yeah,
was that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it started with a Cool Herc DJ party on the block.
Nice. Okay, all right, for sure. Turn 50 this year. Is there anything else that's like? Oh, actually, there is one thing, and this might be in the same vein of what you were talking about earlier about Kansas City's like resistance to change and like keeping up, not necessarily keeping up, but just like resistance to change, but like. you have strong feelings about Kansas City and like a lot of projects that possibly could be happening here pretty soon. Is that true? Like,
yeah,
what are the potential projects that got your eye, and what are your thoughts, and what does it say about? Maybe it might just be a broader critique of capitalism or something like that, but is there anything going on with Kansas City going on that you're...
Well, there's a whole lot going on in Kansas City that I kind of have problems with. Not, like, I don't... Let me just state, I don't hate Mayor Lucas. I don't have, like, no personal quarrels with him as a person. Like, I've met him in person before. He's a cool guy. Like, I have nothing personal against him as a person. I just want to get that clear. Because some people may interpret it as like, I may hate Mayor Lucas. And I don't. Like, I don't have no reason to hate him as a person. He hasn't done nothing to me or said anything wild to where I hate him. It's just, I don't support the whole movement for the Royal Stadium downtown. Because, like you said, it's money driven. It's a money play. You know, every quote unquote major city is creating an entertainment district around sports teams, which is now centered in downtown. And it just doesn't make sense to me because it's going to cost like $2 billion to make, right? And the Royals wants to pay half of that, which is like $1 billion from tax dollars. And the Royals, as you know, are historically a loser franchise. The Royals, so they don't have a legacy that would bring traffic and money from out-of-towners to want to come see them. The Royals have been playing baseball for 56 seasons in Kansas City, I believe, or just as an organization. And they've only made the postseason 9 times. And I think anybody with business smarts would just realize like that's not a good investment to make because you're not going to get that return in profits. Because just because we build the Royals a new stadium downtown doesn't mean they're going to start spending money to get a winning championship. We've only had like 2 winning teams in the last decade and they went to the World Series. And when we actually won it, we couldn't bring none of them back because we didn't want to pay none of them.
And I think this is all in the context of the Dodgers spending $1 billion on the books for 2 players.
Yeah.
Ohtani and some other Japanese player that I can't pronounce. It was like some fucking prorated $700 million and then $300 million. So like baseball is broken. So like, I'm not sure if that's the horse you want to hitch your wagon to or some shit like that as far as a sport and invest a lot into. But I don't know. I'm on the outside looking in.
And my biggest thing is like, I just think there's so much in the city that could be improved on that will actually benefit the citizens and the people of the city as opposed to having us spend $1 billion for a Royal Stadium in downtown that may only be like a hot commodity for like the first seasons there. But then once the Royals suck again, no one's going to go to the games. And it's like downtown is already a clusterfuck as it is. So it's not like we need a Royal Stadium downtown to add to the mix. But
I don't get the sense that baseball stadiums have like a lot of utility outside of baseball. Are stadiums used for a lot of different things outside of baseball, though? Well, like baseball stadiums? Because I know football stadiums have
concert and
utility and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. A basketball stadium could do a lot of things, but are baseball stadiums like useful for other things outside of baseball?
I've never seen none.
That's what I'm saying. And I don't know.
And it's just like, I just don't like how, you know, we're just conforming who we are as a city to adapt to what other cities are doing. Because eventually we're going to lose our identity. And not only that, we're going to lose pretty much all the people that made Kansas City what it is because everything's just going to get priced out. And it's like, we're going to be the ones paying for all this new stuff that they're going to build for us to get priced out of. Mm-hmm. So if a stadium goes downtown, like, what do you think it's going to do to the rent just around the area? Like, you can't live in downtown no more after that. You can barely live in downtown as it is. Mm-hmm. So, like, I would just rather us use that money to actually benefit the people of the city so we could actually keep making Kansas City what it is. Because the Royals don't make Kansas City what it is. We make Kansas City what it is. Like, we support the Royals. And we love the Royals no matter how shitty they are because those are our Royals. But it's like, I don't want you to strong arm me into paying for a new stadium that you may not even win games in.
Oh, yeah. I've been a part of those kind of like threats and like fucked up messaging that happens from the Chiefs when they talk about, we need this. We might end up moving here if you don't do this and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, come on, man. I was up there watching fucking Matt Castle throw to fucking Donnie Avery at training camp, man.
Right, come on, bro. They were trying to threaten us with move. Like, bro, you can move, Matt Castle. Like, you can go somewhere else. I don't care where you go. Chiefs were going through this problem, the city would get behind it, no problem. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have a problem with the Chiefs wanting to, like, improve the stadium.
Oh, interesting. It's specifically baseball and the Royals.
Because it's like the Royals, they're not good. So it's for y'all. For y'all to just try to strong arm is like, hey, we'll go to Kansas. I'm like, Golden, like, who do you think you are to just threaten us? You gave us 2 World Series appearances in 1 decade and you haven't done shit before that. Like, the last World Series appearance was in like, what, 72 or 86? Yeah, come on, man. Like, you're not that good to be threatening us to leave the city, bro. Yeah. Like, y'all can go to Kansas all you want. I don't care. I don't go to your games anyway.
It feels inevitable, though, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's gonna happen like in all likelihood. Yeah.
Yeah, I think all things considered, like, the city's going to force it to happen.
Okay.
Because once my homie broke down the play of how, like, the politic play of why Lucas is doing what he is with the whole negotiations is that, you know, he doesn't want to have his term be the one where the Royals left town. So now I was like, okay, once he explained it to me in that term or that sense, I see why Mayor Lucas is navigating the way he is. So, like, I'm not mad at it, but as a citizen using tax dollars to build a Royal Stadium downtown that's not going to actually have any real impact on the citizens' lives here, that annoys me. Because if we have a $1 billion budget to invest into the city, why not do it in a way that's actually going to be impactful and help us? The Royals are not going to help Kansas City. The Royals can't even help themselves. So there's nothing Royals baseball is going to do for Kansas City that's going to make our lives better other than just having a $2 billion stadium downtown.
For sure. Yeah, I see. I could hear the passion. I could read the passion whenever I'm online. So, like, I was curious. I could hear it in your voice.
Yeah, bro. Sorry.
It's all good. Did you care? Like, it's like, this is one of the things about Kansas City. I get the sense. I'm not sure if this is about everybody, but you care about Kansas City.
Like, I just want us to be able to, like, enjoy the fruits of the city being on the rise without having to, like, literally pay for it. Because, you know, obviously, they use the whole term, like, we're a city on the rise. But the only thing on the rise is the rent,
man,
and the prices of everything.
I get the sense that people, there's some, I don't know. I'm not really plugged in enough because I'm living out of town now to, like, really know. But, like, the World Cup bid, the mm-hmm. new airport, that, like, some people in the city got their sights on, like, being, like, a national thing. Like, Kansas City is not satisfied with being the Kansas City.
Nah, son, it's like, you're going to... And it's like, and we're
by any means necessary.
Too. Yeah. And it's like, we're building our whole city to be around tourism. And it's just like, so you're not building nothing in the city to be actually for the people. You're building it for people to come visit. But it's like, if you're just pretty much telling us, though, like, the fuck off. People that live here is like, you know, like, we're not doing this for y'all. We're doing this so people will want to come visit. And so now, like, we're going to be the ones end up paying for it, literally and figuratively.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, it, you know, it's happening everywhere, apparently, so we just got to suck it up.
Yeah.
You know, like, boo-hoo, it's happening.
I don't know what the answer is, but, like, yeah, I think you summed it up earlier in, like, a super positive way, in a way that seemed like you really cared about the people here and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah,
it's a great city, man. Like, we got great culture. We got great city. I think it's super cool that both our stadiums are, like, right next to each other.
Yeah.
They're secluded, so you can actually, like, have space out there. Like, you can't tailgate in downtown. Can barely park in downtown. You try to tell me we're going to tailgate? Yeah. Like, because that, to me, tailgating culture is really, like, Kansas City culture at its core, and, like, what we're about, and, like, how we are as people when we come together to, like, for one purpose, you know,
it's
like
different
sports.
Out here, man. It was, and, like, the kickoff was at noon yesterday, and there was people parked out in front of the gates,
like,
at
6:30 in the morning. Yeah, like ready to tailgate for this
absurd,
Chiefs game. Like,
absurd.
It's just like, that's us, man. I feel like if you take that from us, we're not going to be the Kansas City that you're going to, like, broadcast to the world.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think individualism is important. I think it's cool. I miss the days when each coast or region of the country had its own culture and style. The internet made us all one big melting pot, and now we're just all becoming one thing, to where, like, there's no real difference between us or as regions or states or cultures.
Yeah. I kind of, when I first stepped into the new airport, I remember thinking to myself, like, if I woke up from a nap or some shit like that, and I woke up in MCI, I would know where I was at immediately, because MCI is, like, not. But, like, now if I woke up there, I would have no idea what city I'm in. Just because, like, it looks like almost every other airport I've been to and all that kind of stuff. It definitely, so, like, there's some sort of, like, losing of, like, that kind of, like, you know, I don't know what you want to call it, idiosyncrasy, personality or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I get what you're saying. Yeah, for sure. That kind of nationalizing of the city is going to definitely lose some personality. But, we'll try to not end it on a pessimistic note.
Yeah, no need for that.
No, it's not. It's not. It's something that I thought was, like, on a lot of people's minds for sure. Was there? This is a question that we always end this whole thing on, and you can answer both or one questions. Is there a book that was either really important to you or sticks out to you or was formative for you at some point in your life, or is there a piece of advice you would give yourself 10 years ago
mm-hmm.
that you feel would help a lot? I'm sure there's a better way to ask that question, but one of those two questions.
Okay. Something I would tell myself 10 years ago. So I was 20 10 years ago. Was something I would tell myself is just to keep leaning into like that feeling of dopeness that you have about yourself. Cause it's like, you know, like 10 years ago, I knew I was always tight. Like I knew I was dope, even like way before that. But I would just like always tell myself to just keep leaning into that feeling and like dig more into that and like feel more into that and just dive into that feeling as much as you can, cause it's only gonna help you. You know, it's like if you may know you're dope, but the people around you may not see that potential in you or that ability in you just yet. But as long as you believe that, cool. Like just keep diving into that emotion and that feeling and great things will happen for you because it'll guide you down the right path you want to go on.
Okay.
And then a book that I would say helped change my life, I would say, I think it's Hustle Smarter, Hustle Harder by 50 Cent. Like that book was really fascinating because I do admire 50 Cent because he had a hell of a life to be where he's at today. And so I always admire just like, listen to him pick his brain, just kind of tell about his story a little bit. And I think one thing that was really impactful about that book was him talking about how he was never afraid to fail, or like no matter how bad it may look in people's eyes or, you know, what people thought of him, he said, you know, like whatever I got to do to like provide for myself, I will do. Like I could lose everything today and you could bet your ass I'll be on that corner tomorrow in New York selling hot dogs because that's what I got to do. I'm a hustler. I don't care how people may feel about it. And that was mostly in reference to the late 2000s, early 2010s, when he was doing all those straight to DVD movies. He said in the time people were laughing at me because my movies were going straight to DVD and they were kind of low budget, but I needed to do that in order to learn how to make movies, how to make film, how to make shows. So when opportunity like Power comes around, I'm ready to go. And ultimately Power comes on. And by that point he was so well versed in the film and entertainment industry that he was able to produce a high quality product that has now created like a whole universe around it. But none of that would have been possible if he didn't make all them straight to DVD movies back in 2009, 10, 8, you know? So it's just like, you know, you can't be afraid to fail in front of people because that's all part of the journey. It's all part of the process. You can't learn unless you're not failing.
Let's go. Super dope. All right. I appreciate you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you for the second time around. And probably most in all likelihood, not the last time.
Hopefully
you're the
not.
First return guest, but it's the first episode. So whack. we'll definitely sit down in the future for sure. Definitely the dreams and projects you got planned for that. I'm excited for it. Appreciate you, sir.
Thank you.
The music and the theme song Groovy was provided by MC Color. And the links to said work will be provided in the description below.